So we're going to continue on from the previous sermon. This is part two of it, and it's on legacy. It's on what do you want to be remembered for? And I titled this one, Let's Go Viral. And of course, this is all little snippets of viral videos, videos that got millions and millions of views and have been passed around on social media and so forth. And so that's just a few. There are hundreds of videos like that. And so how would you like to be known for making a video that has 56 plus million views on YouTube? I mean, to some people, they could care less, but to the younger generation now, YouTube is a big thing, and to have 56 million views is a very big thing. And so viral video is something that becomes popular through the viral process, of course, through internet sharing, which is through YouTube or social media like Facebook or through email. Each day, more and more people are trying to become famous by creating the best viral video. They'll gain them the most attention and make them the most popular in general among the rest of the YouTubers. And now, because YouTube has become such a big hit, people get paid to make videos. I mean, what a sweet deal that is. You can sit in front of a webcam and make a video and people watch it. I mean, there are some really big names out there that not many people would know of, but there's a guy that goes by the name of PewDiePie, which sounds a really weird name, but his real name is Felix, and he's from Sweden, and he has the most subscribers to his channel with 30-plus million people. It means 30-plus million people watch his videos every day, and you guys, do you know what he does? He comments on video games. He plays video games and comments on it, and he gets scared, and people watch his reactions, and that's how he does it. And he makes lots of money by doing this. The more subscribers you have, the more money you make. And so he's in the YouTube business at the top of the line, making the most money, which seems kind of ridiculous that you can make videos and make that much money. Now, I'm not trying to bash people for making YouTube videos because I use YouTube videos in my sermons and I watch them on occasion to make me laugh or someone share something on Facebook, but there are other YouTubers. A guy that goes by the name, his name is Mark, and so he makes videos, and he does it solely for the fans. He doesn't care how many subscribers he gets. He doesn't care how much money he makes. It's all for his fans. His fan base is, surprisingly, people who are depressed, people who need uplifting, people who are going through struggles, and they watch his videos, and they make them happy. And so he makes his videos for people like those, to make people happier, to brighten their day, to make them kind of go through one more day. And to this date, he's actually given $250,000 to charity through the YouTube process of making videos. That's very well, considering he's not as high as Felix in Sweden, who makes lots of money. And so each person has their reasons for doing what they do, whether it's selfish or not. Random videos that are not expected to go viral, they go viral and actually end up helping the person that is in the video. And there's a video I want to show you guys. It's another YouTube video. And it's a viral one. It should say the man with the golden voice. The one that doesn't say Kronk. We'll say that.
There are often homeless people asking for change at freeway exit ramps. But recently, there's been this guy with an interesting sign at I-71 and Hudson Street. His handwritten sign says he has the God-given gift of a great voice.
Hey, I'm going to make you work for your dollar. Say something with that great radio voice.
When you're listening to nothing but the best of oldies, you're listening to Magic 98.9. Thank you so much. God bless you. Thank you. And we'll be back with more right after these words. And don't forget, tomorrow morning is your chance to win a pair of tickets to see this man live in concert. Thank you so much. Well, when I was 14 years old, I was born and raised in Brooklyn, New York. When I was 14, I kind of listened to one of our area radio announcers. And I went as a field trip to go meet the guy, and he looked nothing like what he sounded like. So I asked him about that, and he said to me, listen, radio is defined theater of mind. And so when he said theater of mind, I just said, well, hey, I can't be an actor. I can't be an on-air personality, but the voice just became something of a development over years, and I went to school for it. And then alcohol and drugs and a few other things became a part of my life. And I got 2 years clean,
And I'm trying hard to get it back, and hopefully somebody from one of these television or radio says, hey, I need a voiceover, or I need something. So, you know, I'm hoping one day, watch Family Guy, weeknights at 7:30 on Fox 28.
So that guy got onto a video by someone that just, I'm going to record this guy because he has an amazing voice. And so they recorded him, and the video went viral, and Ted Williams is actually, he does voiceovers for commercials and other TV shows. He's off the streets now, and he's making a living. He's getting back. The viral video helped him get back on his feet, and so there's some good stuff to that. So his Pure Radio Talk Show Gold, man, just what are the chances of finding a guy on the streets and then such an amazing voice? So good. So people are remembered for taking chances, for stepping out when a voice was needed or an action was to take place, or when compassion was needed and not being found. People are also famous for making, well, fun of themselves. As we can see on different YouTube videos, you can find people making fun of themselves and they get lots of hits. At the same time, people are remembered for taking the small steps, the small areas where you're not required or recognized by a crowd, but rather only by the person that is in front of you. But we know that God sees you when you act upon these small things. And so last week we were talking about how would you like to be remembered? And there were some people that could or can answer that question without hesitation or little thinking about that. But there are also those that, you know, it would take a little bit more to come up with something to be remembered by, or maybe some people just didn't feel that they could be recognized for something great. And so here's the question for you again. How or what would you like to be remembered by or for? Have you ever sat and pondered on this question, or have you pondered this question this week? Have you questioned some of your actions or acted upon the small voice inside of you telling you to do something? Have you noticed that the 10-second rule maybe is more prominent in your life than maybe you didn't notice before? When we do not act on the voice disappears, and we go back to our daily life. And so I'm going to recap a little bit about Nehemiah from last week. And so we're following our character, Nehemiah, through his book. And we learned a bit about his background, about how he's part of the exiled Jews living in Persia, but were released to go back to their homeland, just as God has foretold. Nehemiah, however, chose to stay behind, and it was beneficial for our story because, well, God used him in the foreign land, just like he used Joseph in Egypt when we read it in Genesis. We learned that first and foremost, when Nehemiah heard the news about his people being in despair, the walls of Jerusalem were torn down and the gates burned, that he prayed. He got on his knees and he prayed, and this was not a one-time deal to pray to God. No, Nehemiah continued to pray until something happened, until he knew that God wanted him to do something. He continually sought after God's will, and that is something that we need to do. We need to continue to seek after God's guidance for strength and for everything to push us forward in his plan, and in all honesty, that we don't miss out on it. Then as we continue to read in Nehemiah, we read that when the time came, he acted. He acted on his prayers, and he acted when God told him to move. And we talked about the 10-second rule, and that we have 10 seconds to act on the small voice that is inside of us telling us to do that. Go talk to that person. Go help that person. I made a small example of us sitting on a bench, and as we're sitting on this bench, we see to our left or to our right, there's a mom or a dad struggling to hold up groceries while their kids are kind of running amok, and they're trying to keep them in control because they don't necessarily want to be embarrassed, or they don't want other people to get mad at them, and all of a sudden the groceries fall, or the packages fall. And as we see this, we see the kids kind of split off, and the dad or the mom is really trying to grab a hold of them, and we're sitting there, and we hear a voice saying, go help them. Go grab those bags, or go round up his kids and bring them back, or her kids. And we sit there, and we're like, oh, man, should I do that? Like, I don't even know the person. Or what if they think I'm trying to steal our kids or steal our stuff? Like, you come up with all these excuses, all these answers, and the 10 seconds pass, and you kind of turn the other way, or you turn to your phone, and you just kind of forget the situation, hoping that someone else would take care of it. And so you act or you don't. And Nehemiah had the opportunity. He, 4 months after he initially heard the news of Israel or Jerusalem being or was destroyed and the people were in distress, he had 10 seconds to act after 4 months when God said, it's time to talk to the king. And we talked that if you were sad in the presence of the king, it showed that the king was not, well, people were not happy with the king. It showed that his reign was bad, and so he would kill anyone who was sad. And so Nehemiah's like, well, if I bring this bad news to him, I might die. You know, that's pretty intense, 10 seconds to decide whether I'm going to die or it's going to work out. And he decided it's going to work out because God is in control. And so he tells the king this whole story about Jerusalem being destroyed, and he needs to go back, and he's like, would you supply some materials for me and guards? And the king's like, yep, I like you, I understand what's going on. Go on, I'll give you leave, I'll give you safe passage, I'll even give you permission to take wood from my personal forest. And so Nehemiah's like, all right, I'm gone, I'm going this. And so Nehemiah, he acted, and he left. And then finally from last week, we talked about Nehemiah going forward, back to his homeland, back to the destruction, knowing that God was going to go ahead of him. To do what God has called us to do can be uncomfortable sometimes, that we do get pushed out of our comfort zone. But the encouragement is that God is in the unknown because he knows what's going to happen. And if he has called you, I'm pretty sure we can have the faith and the ability to know that it's going to be okay. It's going to work out one way or another because God is there and it's for his kingdom. I probably told this story about this person before, but there's a German missionary named Reinhard Bonnke, and he is a missionary to Africa, and he was doing a lot of great stuff. He was evangelizing to many Africans, and many people were turning to the Lord. And one day, just questions popped into his head as he was praying. He's like, God, why did you choose me? I mean, there are so many people out there that might be more qualified, can better tell the testimony, can better preach the gospel, and yet here I am doing it. And he gets the answer saying, well, the first person that I called said no. You said yes, and so I'm going to use you. And so I hope that we accept the call and don't become the first person, go, I don't want to do it, and then watch the person behind us be blessed because God is doing amazing things and using him when we could have been used in the exact same way. But at the same time, that doesn't mean that you're used up and no more chances. God is always going to find different chances and different times that he will use you. And so that brings us to the now part, the part two of what do you want to be remembered for. And by looking in the book of Nehemiah, I started to read that he went viral. And I mentioned the viral is something that gets really popular and people catch on to it and it spreads and people just either mock it or they pass the video along. But Nehemiah didn't have a video. He had something else. He had God. And he was about to go viral. And I'm gonna tell you about this and how he went viral. And hopefully I can shed a little bit more light onto helping you to maybe figure out how would you like to be remembered. So the first point, Nehemiah surveyed what needed to be done. And so we read in Nehemiah chapter 2, verses 11 to 20, and it says this. So I came to Jerusalem and was there 3 days, and I rose in the night, I and a few men with me. I did not tell anyone what my God was putting into my mind to do for Jerusalem, and there was no animal with me except for the animal on which I was riding. And so I went out at night by the valley gate in the direction of the dragon's well and on to the refuse gate, inspecting the walls of Jerusalem, which were broken down, and its gates, which were consumed by fire. Then I passed on to the fountain gate and the king's pool, but there was no place for my mount to pass. And so I went up at night by the ravine and inspected the wall. Then I entered the valley gate again and returned. The officials did not know where I had gone or what I had done, nor had I as yet told the Jews, the priests, the nobles, the officials, or the rest who did the work. And then I said to them, you see the bad situation we are in, that Jerusalem is desolate and its gates burned by fire. Come, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem so that we will no longer be a reproach. I told them how the hand of my God had been favorable to me and also about the king's word which he had spoken to me. Then they said, let us arise and build. And so they put their hands to good work. But when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite official and Geshem the Arab heard it, they mocked us and despised us and said, what is this thing you are doing? Are you rebelling against the king? And so I answered them and said to them, the God of heaven will give us success. Therefore, we his servants will arise and build. But you have no portion, right, or memorial in Jerusalem. And so the initial call to go gets us so excited and so pumped to do something for the kingdom of God, and so we go. We get our fire in our hearts, and we go, yeah, I'm going to move, or I'm going to go to this new job, or I'm going to volunteer in this new position, and it's going to be awesome. And you're really excited, and then you step into it, and you're like, ooh, I don't know if I really understand what I'm going to be doing, or I don't know what to do. And so we get a little bit scared. And so when we arrive, what we kind of should do, or we should think about doing, is surveying what has been done in the past and see what has worked and what hasn't worked. And then we look into the now and see how it is right now, seeing if the past has worked. And then we look into the future and see what we can secure and see if we can grow or get our passion to spread to the people so that the future is more secure. And so Nehemiah arrives in Jerusalem. No need to knock on the gates because the gates are destroyed. And so he walks in and he's looking at the devastation that is around him, and he's seeing breaches in the wall that people can easily just walk in and out of. And he sees boulders from the destruction that the Babylonians used to knock the walls down. And he says, this place is a mess. He's like, I got to do something. And the only place that I really, really is a home is the people that are living there, people that have returned from the exile. And for lack of a better word, they have a shanty kind of town. It's built of just random materials. It's something to give them a little bit of a roof over their head. And so there's not a lot. And so it makes you wonder why Nehemiah would really want to continue on if there's really nothing there. But he knew that God had a plan, and he was going to work for it. And so, I mean, if I walked into a scenario like that, I think I'd be pretty overwhelmed, because my upbringing from Nehemiah's point of view is I'm not a stonemason. I did not build walls for King Artaxerxes. I didn't do any kind of that stuff because I was a cupbearer. I mean, I wouldn't say the easiest job, but at the same time, I'm not a master craftsman or anything. And so I wonder what he was thinking when he walked in. I don't know what I'm doing. I'd be a little bit scared at that point. And so he's like, you know what? First thing I'm going to do is I'm going to walk around these walls. I'm going to see what really needs to be fixed. I'm going to see maybe the material that is around that we can use. And that's how I'm going to first get started. And so he walks around Jerusalem. He doesn't tell anyone about this because he wasn't going to let them know about God's plan just yet. And so he walks around and he's walking close to a ravine. Jerusalem is built in an interesting way. It's kind of built on a mountain in a way. And one side is a steep ravine, and the other side is it's slanted. And so it's not the easiest way. And as we read in Nehemiah, that he couldn't ride his animal. He actually had to get off his animal and walk around and not fall. And I mean, if he fell, no one would notice he was gone. Not many people knew that he was sneaking out at night to survey. Eventually, the king would be like, hey, have you heard from Nehemiah in a while? Weird. And so he would disappear. And so I have a video I want to show you guys. If you guys have seen Emperor's New Groove, you will know this scene. It's Kronk, and he's trying to sneak around. And this is somewhat how I picture
Guess where I am
Nehemiah.
Right now. Uh-huh. In the bag. Still think I'm not the victim here? Watch. It gets better. Oh, he's doing his own theme music? Big, dumb, and tone deaf. I am so glad I was unconscious for all of this.
Mission accomplished. Shoulder angel.
Don't listen to that guy. He's trying to lead you down the path of righteousness. I'm going to lead you down the path that rocks.
I'll come off it.
You come off it.
You.
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 You, Infinity. Ah. Listen up, big guy. I got three good reasons why you should just walk away. Number one, look at that guy. He's got that sissy stringy music thing.
We've been through this. It's a harp, and you know it.
All right. That's a harp. And that's a dress.
Robe.
Reason number two. Look what I can do.
But what does that have to do with him?
No. He's got a point.
Listen, you guys. You're sort of confusing me, so be gone. Or, however I get rid of you guys.
That'll work.
What's with the chimp and the bug? Can we get back to me?
And so Nehemiah, as he's walking around this wall, he's trying to be, well, not sneaky, but I wonder if people are walking around and he's like, oh, I don't want them to know what I'm doing, otherwise they'd ask me a question. And I bet, I'm not saying he had the shoulder devil going on, conversation going on, but I bet he was asking God, he's like, God, how am I going to do this? I know you're mighty, I know you're powerful, I know you called me, but this is one tough work. And so, just like Kronk was watching this bag float away, it's kind of, you know, he's going to save it or he's not. And so Nehemiah is going, do I save the walls or do I go back to Persia and be safe and secure? But of course, we read that he made his way around and he went back and then he met with the people. He was getting a plan in his head, and he was checking it off. He's like, first, I have to get to Jerusalem. Check. He's like, second, trust God that he's going to move here. Check. Now I need to build a wall. Man, it's a lot harder than the first two checks. And so this is the part where it goes viral. This is the part where it gets really excited because he's about to light a passion in the hearts of the people that were there, and it's going to spread. And this is the cool part because it says in Nehemiah chapter 2, verses 17 and 18, it says, then I said to them, you see the bad situation we are in, that Jerusalem is desolate and its gates burned by fire. Come, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem so that we will no longer be a reproach. I told them how the hand of my God had been favorable to me and also about the king's word which he had spoken to me. Then they said, let us arise and build. And so they put their hands to good work. I mean, I wish it was that easy for like us to say something and people were like, yeah, let's do it. But he's like, God is with us. God is for us. God is going to make this happen. Who's with me? Everyone's like, yeah, I'm tired of this. This is awesome. Because they've just come out of an exile. Like, I mean, they've been exiled for 70 plus years and now they're back and God's talking to them again. It's kind of like, woo, you're talking to me. That's awesome. So they're like, let's not screw this up. Let's get on to what he says. And so they're like, yeah, let's do this. And so the town, the city, it goes viral. These people are excited to build this wall and it spreads through everyone. And if we read, I'm not going to read all of chapter 3, but chapter 3, it lists the names of people who are like, yeah, this person built the gate. This person cut the wood for the gate. This person started working on this portion of the wall. This person did this. And it names all the lists of these people who are doing work for God. And it's awesome because it spread. It went viral. And it was such a short time because, I mean, 3 days he walks on the walls. And like after 3 days, he's like, all right, God, I can't do this by myself. And one man, he can try to move mountains, which he can, but this is a bunch of walls. I need people to act. And so God's like, yep, we got workers for you. Let's do this. And so everyone's like, yep, let's build these walls. And so he surveyed. That's what he did. First, he surveyed what needed to be done. He made a plan, and then it spread. And so number two, people ridiculed Nehemiah's efforts. And so it comes down to, will you be remembered for standing your ground and continue to work when people say something wrong towards you? So Nehemiah chapter 4, verses 1 to 3 says this, now it came about that day when Sanballat heard that we were rebuilding the wall. He became furious and very angry and mocked the Jews. He spoke in the presence of his brothers and the wealthy men of Samaria and said, what are these feeble Jews doing? Are they going to restore it for themselves? Can they offer sacrifices? Can they finish in a day? Can they revive the stones from the dusty rubble or even the burned ones? Now Tobiah the Ammonite was near him, and he said, even what they are building, if a fox should jump on it, he would break their stone wall down. So I'm going to give you guys a little bit of background about who Sanballat is. Sanballat was a prominent Samaritan who was a persistent and serious enemy to Nehemiah during the time of the rebuilding. Sanballat's opposition escalated from moral damaging mockery, psychological warfare, to an attack that was aborted due to the Jews heavily arming themselves while they worked, and to plots to assassinate Nehemiah. But it all failed. Sanballat even tried to get the Lord to again devastate the people of Judah through the marriage of his daughter to a son of the high priest in an apparent attempt to once again corrupt the religious practices of the Jews, which is what got them sent into exile in the first place. But that too was successfully countered by Nehemiah. The thing about Sanballat is that he was also probably behind the opposition described in Ezra chapter 4, which stopped the work in Jerusalem. Sanballat served as a governor of Samaria, and Tobiah served in the region east of the Jordan. These district magistrates were leaders of the Samaritan factions in the north and east. They had lost any resource to prevent Judah from rebuilding since God's people were authorized to fortify their settlement against an attack from enemies such as these two officials. So pretty much that says, if they attacked, the king of Persia would rain heavily down on them and they would not survive. And it's like, we don't want to get the king of Persia angry. And so the Jews kind of had a fail-safe in a way. Since Nehemiah was a cupbearer to the king and a friend and got safe passage, no one could attack him. And so Sanballat was left to just mockery, to trying to discourage them through lies and name-calling. And so here's another question to add to the few questions that I have asked you guys. Have you ever done or been doing something that someone comes up to you and criticizes you for it? It could have been in school for a project you're working on, could be in a volunteer position, and how you handle situations, or in your job, about how you accomplish tasks. I mean, if you're not doing the same way as someone else, you must be doing it wrong. That is what Nehemiah is going through with Sanballat and Tobiah. When they first saw Nehemiah going towards Jerusalem, they mocked him for trying to get something going. They tried to deter him from doing anything but saying it was a failed attempt to even try. It is a lost cause. When reading this part, Tobiah makes me think of, you know how sometimes bullies have like a right-hand man? You guys ever watch movies and there's like a bully and like little guy's like, yeah, he's got this. And so it makes me think Tobiah is that to Sanballat. Sanballat's like, yeah, what are you going to do, build a wall? And Tobiah's like, yeah, what are you going to do, build a wall? It's like, stop mocking me. Yeah, stop mocking him. It's like, why'd I even have you around? That's what makes me think of Tobiah. Like, Sanballat is the main guy, the main bully, and Tobiah just, he's there to be like, I got a big brother bully right here kind of thing. So Tobiah doesn't seem too intense. The only thing he says is that a fox will jump on your wall and it'll break. It's like, ooh, is that the best thing you can come up with? You should probably work on that kind of thing. And so we can only really read about Sanballat mostly. And so will you be remembered for standing your ground? Will you be remembered for standing up for what you believe in? And so I'm going to skip ahead a few chapters that we find Sanballat still trying to discourage Nehemiah. I mean, this guy did not let up. So we read in Nehemiah chapter 6, verses 2 to 9, it says this, "Then Sanballat and Geshem sent a message to me saying, 'Come, let us meet together at Sephirim in the plain of Ono, but they are planning to harm me.' So I sent messages to them saying, 'I'm doing great work and cannot come down. Why should the work stop while I leave it and come down to you?' So they sent messages to me four times in this manner, and I answered them in the same way. Then Sanballat sent his servant to me in the same manner a fifth time with an open letter in hand. In it was written, 'It is reported among the nations and Geshem saying that you and the Jews are planning to rebel. Therefore, you are rebuilding the wall, and you are to be their king according to their reports. You have also appointed prophets to proclaim in Jerusalem concerning you, a king is in Judah. And it will report it to the king according to these reports. So come now, let us take counsel together.' Then I sent a message to him saying, 'Such things as you are saying have not been done, but you are inventing them up in your mind. For all of them were trying to frighten us, thinking they will become discouraged with the work and it will not be done. But now, O God, strengthen my hands.'" So Sanballat could not officially attack, like I mentioned. The king of Persia would send people to pretty much wipe them out if they touched the Jews. The Jews were under letter by the Persian king to say, you guys are safe. Rebuild your walls, protect yourselves. And so Sanballat sends letters to him saying, hey, come meet with me so we can talk. And Nehemiah's like, I know what you're trying to do. You're trying to discourage me. You're trying to get me away from the work so that the walls can't be completed. And if I go out there, you'll probably kill me. And then they'll lose their leader and the walls may not be completed. So he's like, no, I'm good. I have great stuff to do here. And that stuff is menial. And I don't care what you have to say. And then, of course, the fifth one pretty much says it's making up lies. And he's saying, you guys are trying to rebuild Jerusalem so that you guys can become a great nation again, and you guys will reign, and the king of Persia will be defeated, and yada, yada, yada. And Nehemiah's like, wow, you got a great imagination. So good. You should use that in some other way because it's not working on me, because that's a bunch of lies. You're such a liar, Sanballat. And so he's like, liar, not coming to meet you. Once again, you're going to try to kill me. I got great stuff to do. Leave me alone. And so Nehemiah constantly had this guy and his little buddy Tobiah trying to discourage him, trying to kill him, trying to cause strife with the king of Persia. They tried all this stuff, and it just wasn't working because Nehemiah knew that he was there because God has called him to be there. And so I give you encouragement in those different situations that you have been called to do. You'll always find one person who disagrees with you and what you're trying to do, and they'll try to discourage you from completing your task. You are doing something important. You're doing important work and have no time to stop to listen to the words and lies of these people. And Satan is the guy that really will try to do that. He will really try to tell you all these lies, saying, maybe you should stop. You've done enough. Let someone else take control. But just like Nehemiah did, he says, no, I got stuff to do. This is great, great work. I mean, Satan will say, this great work that you started, well, you've done as much as you can, but it's not done. God has called you to complete those tasks, and so I give you encouragement that those lies, as much as they may sting a little bit, it's not the truth. Because God has called you to do something great. And so I take you to number three that I found in Nehemiah, to go viral. And it's be an example. I can stand here and tell you all the ways to be better, to better your life, to be remembered, and to give you a solution to living a healthy life and to live a full, godly, adventurous life where you listen to his calling at every moment, and I can give you all these resources and all these lists, and then you guys can be better people. But the whole phrase of walk the walk and talk the talk really comes into play here. I mean, if I just talk and talk and talk and talk, I become a sounding gong. And it's just like, wow, he just keeps saying stuff. I don't see any actions coming from him. And so when Nehemiah says be an example, it's let's do what I say. Let me be an example to you guys that when I say the stuff, it works because in my life, I'm doing it. I mean, I don't want to be just a guy that talks and talks and talks and writes books and, you know, live a life in 10 easy steps, you know, God's going to bless you with these easy steps. It's no, like, be the example. And so Nehemiah was the example to the people that he was over. And so to be remembered for a life, well, to remember for something, I mean, there's only a few people to say, yeah, I remember these great talks that I had with this person and it helped me. But I think a lot of people are remembered for stepping out and doing something. And so we read in Nehemiah chapter 5, verses 14 to 19, it says, moreover, from the day that I was appointed to be their governor in the land of Judah, from the 20th year to the 32nd year of King Artaxerxes, for 12 years, neither I nor my kinsmen have eaten the governor's food allowance. But the former governors who were before me laid burdens on the people and took from them bread, wine, and besides 40 shekels of silver, even their servants domineered the people. But I did not do so because of the fear of God. I also applied myself to the work on this wall. We did not buy any land, and all the servants were gathered there for work. Moreover, there were at my table 150 Jews and officials, besides those who came to us from the nations that were around us. Now that which was prepared for each day was an ox and six choice sheep. Also birds were prepared for me, and once in 10 days all sorts of wine were furnished in abundance. Yet for all this I did not demand the governor's food allowance, because the servitude was heavy on the people. Then he says, remember me, O my God, for good according to all that I have done for these people. So being a governor in Jerusalem, you were entitled to different perks. And they mentioned a food allowance. You're able to have this, I don't know, a secret storage of food that was just reserved for you. But Nehemiah didn't do that because if he took food and placed it just for himself, the people that were working on the wall would be with less food. And so he's like, I'm not going to do that. And he also did not tax the people. He didn't go, give me 40 shekels of silver so I can buy stuff. He didn't do that, because, I mean, what was there to buy in Jerusalem? He was there for a purpose to rebuild. He was also, there was also, you could, able to purchase land for yourself, and he didn't do that either. And it also says that 150 people from the surrounding area came, and he fed them. Nehemiah was considered to be a well-off person. I mean, the king of Persia really liked him, and so he fed 150 people by his own means. It means he didn't take food from the tables of the people working on the wall. He's like, I have my own food. You guys, I'm not going to take that. You have that. You need your strength. Here's my food. I'm going to feed people. And so Nehemiah was a very different governor than Israel had in the past. He was not one to take stuff away from the people because they were all working for the same cause, all working for the kingdom of God. We're all trying to accomplish this thing that God has set before us. And so he wasn't going to do anything to stop that, to block it. And so he was hoping that by example, his example would be viral. I mean, he didn't stay home and go, oh yeah, the wall looks pretty good from this distance. He was out there, he was moving bricks, he was putting stuff down, he was making it secure, he was working beside people who were also working. And also, a governor had servants, and servants didn't have to work as hard as the other people because they worked for the governor. He's like, nope, everyone does their part. And so everyone was doing it, and he was being a part of it. He was leading by example how people should work and live and work on the wall. So I mentioned in my first sermon that everyone has talents and gifts that are given to us by the Holy Spirit to work for the good of our Heavenly Father, to push forward the Great Commission. Everyone has different talents, but we're all going towards the same goal. Just as the body has different parts, but every part is essential and they all work together. So are we. We are all essential for the goal that is working. Just as the body is different parts, essential. So we are all essential for the goal that is set before us, to get everyone excited for the gifts. And I think that's what Nehemiah was working on. He let people who had special gifts work on the special parts, and he didn't change that. He's like, oh, you're really good at, you know, putting bricks on the foundation. I'm gonna put you over on building the gate with wood. I know you love wood. So he didn't do that. He's like, you have a special gift. I'm gonna put you where you have it. And so just like all of us have the special gift, we have a place that God is gonna put us to use our gifts. And I think for us to be an example, I don't think we should hide our gifts. God has given us gifts to use for his glory to proclaim the kingdom of God, and I don't think that we should hide them. I mean, the more that we show our gifts for the glory of God, and not show our gifts for our own recognition, but for the glory of God, the more that people will catch on and go, that's awesome. I mean, do I have any gifts? And they search it out, and they go, what am I good at? What has God given me the ability to do? And so it gets people excited. And in some ways, it could get people to go viral to look for their gifts, to go, yeah, I'm really good at this. I'm going to go over here and help. I'm good at this. I'm going to do this. And so on and so on. It gets people excited to look for what they're really, really good at, what God has given them. To be remembered as an example of God's light on earth, to be an example of grace to those that feel that they have not had it, to be examples of Jesus' love to the poor, oppressed, and downhearted is something great. To be examples, it's what people follow. I mean, a great leader does, and people follow those people that do. Like, there are people that are not sitting out there who are leaders instantly, but people follow them anyways. I mean, I'm a youth pastor, and people look up towards me and my youth group, but I have leaders who have amazing gifts and talents that people look up to just as much as they look up to me. And so everyone has these gifts, and you don't have to be the position to be a leader. I mean, you don't have to have the title. You can be an example where you are. And so Nehemiah chapter 5, 19, verse 19 says, remember me, O my God, for the good according to all that I've done for these people. So worship team can get ready to come up. This is how I'm going to conclude it. There's the way that we talked about is to survey what needs to be done. And that can be in your job, what needs to be done. It can be a volunteer position, what needs to be helped out and volunteer. What needs to be done around my family, what needs to be done in this different areas. You survey what God has placed before you and go, how can I help? And then there will always be people who are going to discourage you. There's always going to be people to get into your face and go, what you're doing is ridiculous. How you do that is ridiculous. You should do it my way because my way has worked so far. But I give you encouragement that God has placed you in that way because he sees talents and gifts inside of you that no one else has seen, and you can bring something to that place, to that volunteer position, to your work, to your school, to anywhere that God is going to use you because he sees something inside you that other people may not necessarily see right away. For every step of the way, Satan will be there, and he'll be trying to discourage you. He'll be telling you lies about someone else will do it. Your gifts are useless. You're not doing anything right. You should back away. People are laughing at you. Just go home. Sit on the bench. Don't listen to the voice. Just be okay with yourself, alone, and in your comfort zone. He's going to be there. He's going to be telling you all those lies, but that's not it. God is the Almighty God, the creator of the universe, and he doesn't tell you those things. He goes, you have this gift. I've placed it inside of you to do great works. And I've placed you there because you have a gift that's going to be for everyone in there. And everyone in there could be one person. It could be two people. It could be three people. It could be multiple people. One way or another, God has a plan for you. And it's, I mean, we're called to be the light of the world. And I mean, if we don't let that shine, how are people going to know the joy that we have? And so don't listen to those lies. If God has placed you there, he has placed you, and you're gonna get those doubts. You're going to get those doubts, but it's going to pass. It's almost like the 10-second rule for the lies. 10 seconds, it's going to be like, lies, 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 and then God's going to be like, all right, you've had enough. This is truth. Believe what I tell you. Believe where I've called you is what I've told you to do. And so after all that, survey, be an example, get people excited. I want us to go viral. I want us to be able to pass on the Great Commission. I want people to understand why we have joy, why we have love, why we have all these things that people don't understand because we have Jesus Christ in our lives. And I want us to go viral in our community. I mean, it doesn't have to just be viral in our church. If it stays contained in our church, it's not viral. It's a group. I want the viral to go out the doors, into the community, and from the community out to the cities, to the country, to everywhere, that this is going to spread. And it's not our church, what we believe in our church. What we believe in our church is great, and it's what everyone else should believe, but it's God's great commission. And to go viral out into the streets, to get everyone, not to force them to believe, but give them hope that there's something out there, and that we can be examples for that, and people are going to be like, I have what you have, and I can see the difference, and it's exciting. And so let's start standing up for what we believe in. Let's start telling of the wonderful things God has done, for God is much more powerful than anything that is before us. And he's going to go before us into the unknown. So when we leave this town, when you graduate, go to school, or go find a new job, or move to a different place, God is going before you because he has called you there, and he's going to use you regardless. All right, you guys. And so that sums it up. Sums it up. Let's go viral. Let's be remembered. For going viral for God. We'll pass it on.